Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, I'm greatly honored to bring you The Enchanted Self with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. Greetings and welcome, Barbara. How are you?
Thank you, Hercules. I'm very good. I'm looking forward to sharing some of my ideas and thoughts tonight from the perspective of both. Yeah, well, we always have fun together, and it's interesting from both the perspective of positive psychology and of the artistic side of me and my thoughts about filmmaking and all sorts of other artistic forms that can actually be very helpful in a pandemic, which we are in.
Yes.
And lastly, even I want to talk a little bit about why therapy can be so helpful to human beings. So we'll see what we can cover, and I'll hope you'll jump in as I reach some points where we can chat about it, okay?
I most certainly will, and I'm looking forward to
talk. All right, so I've labeled this talk Making the Holiday Season Joyful Even During a Pandemic. So we all want, that was my title. And I'm going to assume that just about all of us want happiness and joy in our lives, particularly on special occasions that we wait for and anticipate. Particularly ones that may only happen once, like a wedding, and those that repeat themselves the same time of the year, just Hanukkah, Christmas, Easter, and other religious and special holidays that people celebrate. So we get quite, we have an anticipation about these things, and we don't want to be disappointed. But often we don't know what to do to make them really come out right, and some people get pretty blue around the holidays. On top of that, this year we've got the pandemic, people telling, experts telling us, medical experts, to stay home, be very careful, and God forbid no one wants to risk their lives, even though they're desperate to see relatives and friends. So it's a hard, conflictual holiday coming up. But I do want to share, as a positive psychologist, some of the ways that we can get past it being very, very difficult and help you understand some of the things better, so we can make some adjustments in our lives when we need to. First of all, major holidays, when we were little kids, maybe our parents took care of them, or a grandma, or an aunt, or our parents, if they had some money, we went off to a hotel. So we kind of thought that these things happened magically. But in reality, major holidays are usually very exhausting and complicated. They have extra planning going on, cooking, perhaps someone is traveling, and there's all sorts of chores on the list, like buying certain presents, getting the toilet fixed in the downstairs bathroom because there'll be some people here, whatever, whole bunch of things going on. And that can lead to frustration, anxiety, and exhaustion. So now we've got another whole layer I have to talk about. Those are the relatives and the friends, the characters. I call them characters because they often are characters.
Yes.
Characters in our personal dramas that we each live with. For example, take Aunt Edith. She walks in on Christmas Day. The tension begins almost for everyone. She drinks a little too much eggnog. We know that's going to happen. And then she blasts the kids for being noisy. And she reminds Sally that she's still carrying that weight from the last baby. Okay? So, you know, we want to get rid of her, but we can't.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are the memories. There's the chair that Dad always sat in, but he's not here this year. And the jokes that he always told that lighten the meal. And it's hard. And then Uncle Harry had passed away also, so there's really two chairs this year. And maybe there's even a more poignant loss, and I don't want to concentrate on the pandemic, but out of respect for so many people that have been lost and their families, I'm just mentioning that there is loss this year.
Yes.
I hope that's not the case in your particular home, but it is for a lot of people. So how are we going to handle all this? How can we get past some of the sadness and really appreciate the beautiful aspects of really the holidays and halftime of the year? I really don't know anything about certain ethnicities and religions, so I can't say much, but both Hanukkah and Christmas have marvelous stories that are considered absolutely true in their liturgy. And wonderful songs and wonderful foods, and they lighten our load as you enjoy these holidays. So understanding your brain is particularly important. It's going to help you with what I'm talking about. Our brains are fabulous machines, still beyond the full comprehension of even the greatest scientists and doctors. The mind, I even looked this up to try to be clear about this. Our minds, which are really even considered metaphorically separate to some extent from our brains, we don't fully understand either. But we do know a lot about how our brains work and how our emotions work. So some of the things that we do know is that our actual physical brains can go into total overload due to emotional upsets, lack of sleep, too many expectations and chores on our minds, worries, and even poor quality of what we're eating. So when our brains are in overload, then our minds cannot think as clearly. And we have more moods that weaken our ability to make good decisions. We feel all sorts of emotions that are unpleasant, such as frustration, anger, disappointment, rage, despair, and more. And who wants all of those?
The
right. result is that we often come into the holidays wrecked, totally wrecked. And our bodies are crying out for better sleep, the right food, time to relax, and our minds are just about giving up, you know, crying. We're a mess. So how can we help our brains and our minds, our bodies, become more effective to prepare and enjoy more fully the holidays? And here are some of my suggestions. I know you might not like them and you're going to say you can't do them, but just try to understand that I'm trying to help you, okay? I'm not here to ruin anything. I want to heighten this. So do not take on more than you can for the holidays. You may not like me saying that, and obviously there may be certain traditions and things you simply have to do, but your mind and body will thank you if you let go of certain things, even at the last few days or week, so that you're not totally overtired and wrecked. For example, let's say you wanted to give a beautiful scarf and you love to knit. It's easy for you. You're great at it. And you're going to give about 10 of them to different people you love. But you only did 3 of them, and they're sitting there, but the other 7 never got done yet. Now, should you struggle to do them the last week or so preparing for a holiday? In my opinion, probably not. You should go out and get, or go on Amazon or go wherever and get some gift cards or something else, and just let it go. You know, it's not as people are going to be taunting you all year. Now, where was that scarf? Where was the scarf? People, most of the time, most of this stuff is really in our own heads, and people will accept whatever genuine effort you've made to help them celebrate. So that's the first step. And then the second is to take care of your needs in general. Remember what they tell you on an airplane. Put your own oxygen mask on first.
Mm-hmm.
That means what we're talking about, getting enough sleep, eating properly, following up on any medical needs, and taking care of yourself and what's for your body. Only you know that. Even if you're married or with a significant other, they don't necessarily understand your needs. You're the one that truly gets it. Now, let's see what else I'm going to tell you. This one might annoy you too. Okay, let me see. No, this one should be good. I want to teach you a different way to approach the holidays and good times in general. I want you to start to perceive them as something that works better when we have energy and clear thinking to really have fun and joy. And I need you to start to understand that joy, happiness, fun only emerge when we have enough psychic energy to give to them and we can focus in a way that allows us to feel and enjoy the drama and excitement of life. So here's an example. Movies, films, they can very often help us reach higher states of energetic, psychic levels that can carry over the next day or two, actually. And I have tested this out many times. My husband and I, before the pandemic, we often went to the movies on Saturday night. And I can tell you that for about 2 hours after coming home, I'd go to the computer and finish up some work or whatever. My energy level was as high as the greatest day, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I felt surrounded by almost like I took on some of the energy from the story I had seen, and it helped my own levels. Do you feel that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I think it's true. I don't know if they've done real experimentation on it, but I know it's true. So I'm going to tell you about one movie. It's called A Christmas Story, and it's about two. You've seen it probably, Hercules, at some point. with about the little boy.
I'm sure. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And everybody tells him that he's going to be, he has to be careful. He shouldn't want a BB gun because it could hit his eye and he'd get his eye out and he becomes extremely frightened, but he still desperately wants it. And the story is all about how he tries to get a BB gun and how he sees Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't want to give away the miracle of the ending, but things are good at his house, you know. Anyway, when I see that, and I always try to watch it at least once a year, it reminds me of so many things I experienced as a child. The snow, and you're a little younger than me, so I don't know if you would remember how the snow suits that we had to make,
yeah,
wear were awful. They were made of thick wool, and they were agony to get on and off.
Mm-hmm. I remember those.
Because all, yeah, the new fabrics hadn't really come along yet. And sitting on Santa's lap. I actually have a picture of me on Santa's lap, and I look at the picture, and I look scared to death. I'm sure I was not able to tell him in any way he could understand that all I wanted in the world was a certain doll, a Tony doll. And the reason she was called a Tony doll was that women were giving themselves home permanents called Tony something. That was the name of the brand, I think. And so the kids, we all wanted the doll, because you could wash and set her here. So the miracle of watching this movie for me is that I don't have to feel any of the pain or disappointments that really faced me as a child. You know, being a child isn't easy.
No.
Every day you're faced with stuff. You know, either your mother's yelling or your father's yelling, or you're late to school, or you didn't take a bath, or whatever. I mean, it wasn't just all paradise. So the enjoyment of going back to my childhood by vicariously taking on the energy from the movie is uplifting. So it's one of the major ways of helping our spirits, or what we can bring in from outside of ourselves to keep the wonderment and the energies, positive energies, going. So, so basically, the bottom line, what I'm talking about, is to find ways to lighten your load and let your brain and body have the best health and energies possible. And I'm going to talk more about that in a little while. So how about considering treating yourself as the most special guest you could be entertaining for the holidays? Wouldn't that be nice?
That sounds awesome.
And by the way, don't stop with the holidays. How about treating yourself more often as the precious person that you are in your own way, I'm sure. So it's, you know, it's complicated. I'm not saying this is simple, but I think you're going to understand more of this because I'm not done talking. Because I really believe that people need to understand where they can pick up positive energy and why it's good, why certain art forms help us in ways that help us get to this energy level. Well, and if we understand it, if we understand we need to pick up energy in other places, and we also understand the level that we, uh, the what, I'm sorry, we also understand what works most easily for us, we always have like almost an extra medicine with us. So let's be realistic. Life as we normally live it is extremely overwhelming in so many ways. And, you know, the brain sifts through thousands of, I don't know, it's probably tons and thousands of things we see in our world around us every day. But we're not even aware of a lot of them because the brain just goes and hides them. They would totally smother us.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, like when someone is hypnotized or something, they'll come out with the gas station that had five Cadillacs in front of it, and they hadn't even remembered, you know, but somewhere it was stored. And we just are so overwhelmed by, and right now in the pandemic, the news, the newspapers, wherever we're going, television, everywhere we're looking for information is even more straining and stressful because we're under a certain amount of anxiety, most of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have that relaxation that lets us sit on the porch and look at a tree and just, we're soothed, you know, we're just kind of soothing ourselves in very simple ways. Now, many of us, many of my clients, and you know, I know this through all the articles I read in psychology, we're experiencing added fear and anxiety and worry and loneliness. And you know what? Our negative thoughts start to get in motion, and what happens in our mind is we say to ourselves, well, there's an awful lot going wrong, and I'm pretty stupid too. You know, it's like we're very good at turning things, so we're kind of the culprit by the time we get done with it. We're just amazing. But anyway, I don't want to divert too much. So why is fiction and nonfiction, why are they so compelling and they can help us so much to focus and relax our brains? Because when you read a book, for example, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you're basically focusing on one plot, have one major plot. And that's not the way it is in our own lives. We're often faced with a million plots at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you read a romantic book, love story that you found somewhere, and it's good, it's engaging, and it actually cheers you up. The story has a plot. The couple meet. They basically fall in love. They are attracted to each other. They may marry or they live together. They have certain things in common, whether they raise dogs or horses or have a child or don't. They may run a business together. And then there's some sort of ending to most books, and they're not going to get published or enjoyed. We expect an ending. And so let's say they have this horse farm and it really does well, and then a horse wins in a race that everybody's excited about, and suddenly they're millionaires. And so you're entertained, you're aroused a bit, you really enjoy reading how they resolve their conflicts and get the horse farm going, and you end up, you know, end up feeling good, and you're not even jealous that they're rich. You know, you're not because on some level, you know, they're not real. You're not in competition with them on any level. So, but look at your own life and I'm not saying you and me and just, you know, the you, the generic you. Okay, so you got married, and you even are happily married. But every day was so filled with jumble. You met this person. It was romantic to some extent, but you had to finish graduate school. You had a second job in the grocery store at night with shelves on the shelves. Your mother had some health problems. You were overweight and desperately on a diet. A hungry cat was coming to your flat all the time, begging for food. You had to adopt the cat, and then the cat needed to go to the vet, and then your account was overdrawn, and then your hair looked terrible that day. And, you know, I could go on and on and on, and it doesn't mean you haven't had a rich life. I'm just saying we flood ourselves, and life floods us. And one of the beauties of the artistic world that surrounds us, because it is a world, and it's a world that goes back thousands and thousands of years. In this world, things are clear enough and without all this extra stuff that we can actually soothe and refuel ourselves, part of our lives. And the worst possible thing, in my opinion, you can do to a culture is start to remove the culture of art in so many different forms, because people need it therapeutically.
That's very
and
true.
So,
you know that a culture is heading towards authoritarianism when they start attacking these stories and art.
So true. You are so right. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. In Russia, they took away so much of the art and so on, and also the ethnic histories of people and the special ways they do things. Yeah,
yeah,
of course. Yeah, I haven't thought of that, but it's absolutely true. Yeah.
So the fact that we have these stories and they can be used therapeutically to heal us is something that gives me great optimism.
Yes. Yes, it does. And we have a lot of culture and art in the American society.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that I was thinking about were books, and now the streaming series on TV. For a long time, TV was pretty much off my list, although I guess I still watched it an hour or two a week. But the coarse comedies that were filling in, or the harsh got stories where people were killing police stories, whatever it was. It wasn't fitting my needs. But I have to say, a lot of the streaming series are beyond, you know, the highest quality filming and acting and fabulous stories. And all types. There's still police stories and, you know, some harsh stuff that happens in some of them, but they're done artistically,
right?
Which is a big difference, you know. And so streaming series, I think, have saved a lot of us during the pandemic. Just something to watch that has some meaning or adventure or humor, all of those things. And there are so many other things, too, besides what else did I list? Drama, the theater, films, and photography and crafts and on, you know, all of these things can help us. And I want to also say before we before we leave this sort of teaching portion of the show, therapy. Why can therapy sometimes be so helpful, sometimes so helpful that a person only goes to one session and never needs to come back, which I have had several times seen in my treatment room. Why? Well, of course, there are many, many reasons, but the one I want to focus on tonight is that the person who comes to the therapist can focus. Why can they focus better with the therapist than with their mother or their best friend or their husband or whatever? Mostly because the therapist is trained to listen and let the person create enough relief through by not interrupting or opinionating or steering the person in some direction that maybe wasn't the core of what this person needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And thing that therapists are trained in. Now, once in a while, you meet people who are not therapists, and they still can do it. And I personally had one experience like that, because I went to Kripalu, which is a wonderful retreat. It had been a very special retreat with a particular Buddhist, I don't know what he was exactly, so I better not say, but, you know, people followed a certain guru. I think that's not the way Kripalu is. Well, that doesn't matter. It's up in Massachusetts. If you want to look it up, it's still there. And I had a great time. And one of the things that happened is I took a workshop where we were paired by twos. So I had a lovely young lady as my partner. And we were told to sit on the floor, take off our shoes and socks. And we were asked to talk to our partner about something on our mind, something bothering us, or something we hope we could accomplish someday, or whatever it was. It had to be something pretty serious to us, and that the partner would rub our feet. Not say anything, but rub our feet. Or not, you know, not respond, try to answer or solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I did what they instructed, and then I talked, and she rubbed my feet, and then she talked, and I rubbed her feet. So I knew exactly what I wanted to talk about, which was kind of spiritual at the time, and I talked about it. And then she had something on her mind, and she talked about it. Now, the fascinating thing was that I felt amazingly relieved, amazingly. And so did she. But now here's the clincher that I'm saved for the very end of it. She was from Israel, and she didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Hebrew.
Wow.
So this was all done at a focusing energetic level, and it worked, you know. So you can imagine that a well-trained therapist will stay out of your way, and you can relieve yourself in ways that other people aren't trained to listen and guide you if necessary, but it's a whole different approach. And many people don't understand that, and they think you have to be, you know, very ill or whatever to even consider some sort of mental health care. But from the mental health care is the relief that you're not carrying as many bundles of problems and different little bags on your back, and they all pop out at the wrong time and kind of strain you again. So I wanted to just talk about that too. Go ahead, chat a bit.
No, that's power. That's powerful. What you shared bears thinking about and contemplation. I remember my days of working in the mental health field and being a therapist. Also, a lot of times listening was the most powerful thing you can do, you know, and you didn't have to say very much. Just let the person talk through, and through their words, through the story they were telling, you can see the world they were living in. And I learned similarly that people listen to songs or read books or watch movies that speak to the story that they're telling themselves about themselves. So, you know, like some part of us needs to look in mirrors. And it doesn't matter what's actually there. It's what we perceive is there and what we're telling ourselves about what's there. And I would see that for people that I had for a long time coming to the clinics I worked in, that the story that they're telling themselves, they became very expert in casting for it. So when they, in their lives, so they would fill these roles and the roles would recur. And you would always know when a person was stuck in their story when they started saying things like all women or all men or all Greeks, you know, whatever, Republicans or Democrats or whatever. When it became an all thing, they were no longer in a reality that doesn't include the alls, but they were in a story. And we live in these stories, so your topic is a very topical one, a very important one, in that we can make our lives more joyous if we're aware of that and we start telling more joyous stories. And we become aware that it's not so much what's happening is how we interpret what's happening, what we tell ourselves about what's happening. And that by telling ourselves more positive things, as you said, treating yourself as a special guest, we can make our lives happier, and we can get through the stories that we normally tell about the holidays by telling new stories, better ones, more empowering ones, less involving victimization and repetition of old patterns.
That is so true. And I'm thinking that the extreme example that I think my father told when I was still a child, and I remember this, although I see that other people have heard it too in slightly different versions. There were two men in some sort of prison hospital situation, and one of them could see out the window, and the other one couldn't because of the way their beds were. And the one that could see out the window was very upbeat, and he would turn to the other fellow and say, it's a beautiful day, and that tree is now blossoming, and I just saw a squirrel run up the tree, and the flowers, or whatever, you know, flowers are coming, and I see that couple walking hand in hand again. And his upbeat capacities helped the other man who couldn't see out, and, you know, he was helped. So eventually the man closer to the window died. And so now this other guy got the space by the window. And when he looked out, he was shocked to see it was a brick wall. So,
something else will worth contemplating.
You know, now that first man has really found a way to have peace given these terrible, terrible, you know, situation, and help the other man too. So that's an extreme, and thank God most of us don't, you know, have to experience that level. But yeah. So I feel that I think what I'm trying to say tonight, and what I feel is missing in what people understand about themselves and the world, are some of the things that both of us are trying to share. You know, I think the if people understood how their brains and their minds really what makes them comfortable, I think they would, and how they can get that comfort through so many forms of art and, of course, nature and even the way we speak to each other, they would try harder, I guess.
Mm.
It's not clearly taught. It's not, you know, it's not that people are bad. They're not really taught it. And anything to do with, like, where your energies are and the thought of maybe psychic energies, transfer of energies between each people. You know, a lot of that is so much on the edge of what's acceptable. And
right.
It's too bad because there is transfer of energies. There are stores that I've gone in that creep me out, and the people I meet that I instantly know there's something wrong. You know, there's all sorts of transfer of energy, whether we talk about it or not.
Yes, that's very true. And again, it's a story that our society tells us about what's real and what isn't real. And just like these stories we grew up with, if we have a different ethnicity, we're mm-hmm. told different stories than people are told who were born here and maybe for generations have considered themselves natives. So we have different stories. It's the same thing with stories that our society tells us, because it's consensus agreement. It's not real in any sense. I remember in Greece, and I'm Greek American, they believe in the evil eye. So when I would tell them as a kid that in America they don't believe in the evil eye, they would say, well, Americans are either spiritually blind or very stupid because everybody knows the evil eye exists, you know. And then they would rattle off stories and incidents that would support what they were saying. So to them, that was part of their reality, that if somebody was excessively jealous or spiteful, that they would have an ill effect on reality. And here we of course, were told that's not real.
Right.
We're told that the spirits the children interact with are imaginary playmates, whereas in other cultures, they're elves or fairies or dearly departed relatives who are watching over them. So again, the phenomenon is the same, but the stories that we're told about them is different. And in our process of growth, we have to challenge these stories because not all of them are true and not all of them are empowering or even to our best interest, you know, to maintain a belief. And yes, with you, I also affirm that there are senses that we have and we do pick up on things that we're not really taught about. And the explanations that are given are ridiculed, and yet they're true to some extent. So that becomes a journey to find out, you know, to what extent mm-hmm. they're true, what's the right way to interpret them and integrate them to live a richer and more joyous life.
That's right. And to not be afraid to maybe be a little bit on the edge and of certain storylines that you're
right.
that fit you, and you know, to live a life that's rich for you, because storylines are not ultimately going to do it for any
no,
of us.
And we forget that
that's
these
one,
are stories.
Yeah.
What is it to be a mate? What is it to be a parent? You know, what is it to a contributing member of society? Every society will give you slightly different qualifications for each of these social roles. And people spend, and I know I've spent in the past, years of their life beating themselves up because they weren't perfectly cast in a role that you know, society thrust on them and told them that they had to live in.
Yeah. Well, I always go back to my mother, who was told by my Uncle David, who was really the patriarch of the family. He said to my mother when she was finishing high school, well, Bernice, you have two choices. You can, I'll pay for you to go to secretarial school, or you can be a, you can work in Feline's department store as a sales lady. And that was the future she was offered.
And that's
that was
set.
That was set. And so what did my mother do? Well, she took the 6-month secretarial course that my uncle paid for because she knew that she'd learn some skills.
Right.
And she got married at 19. That's what she did. Fortunately, to a wonderful man, was my father. And but, you know, she wasn't going to be a sales lady. She didn't really want to be a secretary either. And since another relative, or maybe, yeah, I think one of her brothers said something to her like, you're dumb, but you're really beautiful. You know, so those were, you know, really reassuring words. So she told my father, you know, all this stuff when they got married. And he, being an educator and a guidance counselor at that point in his young life, brought home an IQ test and gave it to her. And she was in utter shock that she was very above average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the die was cast, fortunately, for her to have a chance at a very full life and to go to college and even get a master's degree because of their marriage. You know, right person. And you're, I mean, it's amazing what marriage means and can do and not do. Certainly understandable by why certain marriages fail, because they're horrible.
Before you were talking about on television, like when TV was not as varied or as creative as it currently
mm-hmm.
is, and there were all these terrible sitcoms
mm-hmm.
that really showed people in horrendous relationships, whether they were married to each other or whether they were talking to their kids or their coworkers. People were horrible. And I remember when people were saying that their lives were that way, that they identified with these shows because the shows reflected their realities. And I found that very horrifying. But again, people are attracted to their stories, and they look in that mirror or listen to the sounds over and over again. It's great when you find yourself with people who can break your story or have you look outside the picture frame that you're living in to see that there are other picture frames and other possibilities. In mental health, I was hired by several organizations because they wanted to extend mental health services in the Greek community. And I, being Greek and speaking mm-hmm. Greek and being acculturated, you know, I was in demand for those type of positions. And back at that time, and again, I'm oversimplifying and I'm exaggerating a little bit just to tell the story, but generally, most Greek people did not believe in mental health. And
mm-hmm.
they would politely listen, but they didn't buy it, you know. And they believed sincerely that if you went to Greece for a little while, everything would be okay. Or if you got married, everything would be okay. So just like
mm-hmm.
you said, secretary school or working in the retail store with all the options.
Right, right.
In terms of getting better, if you're Greek at that point of time here in the northeastern United States, those are your options for getting better. You could either go back to the old country and that would somehow realign you to how life should be, or you can get married and you'd have responsibilities so you could drop all that nonsense that you were stuck in, and you live a socially responsible life. And of course, that wasn't the case, but to them, that's what they believed, and those are the options that they offered you.
Well, of course, and to be fair to these ethnic so on, many of these people had struggled for survival for so many centuries, and you know, they were doing the best they could in what they had seen of the world. And you know, I think that in my mother's family, the men had a wonderful opportunity way beyond what Jewish men had had in Europe, because the first fellow that came was an entrepreneur who made money that helped a lot of the rest of the family. But it should say, just because I'm proud of it, that my grandmother's brothers all got to go to college, and most of them went to Harvard. One didn't, I think. I think my grandfather went somewhere else. But for the women, there was no new projection of what they should do aside from marry and have a family, because nobody wanted a big family anymore where babies died and you practically collapsed taking care of 9 or 10 children. And, you know, but other than that and doing charity work, there was nothing that anyone was seeing, you know. So that's the world my Uncle Dave lived in. But I wanted to say one other thing before we run out of time, that as I've been a psychologist, you know, and seen hundreds of people and keep growing, I hope, myself, I realize that oftentimes you have to let people keep these biases and pockets of stuff that make them feel good, because they're part of their history, and you have to work very much around where there is any general window of understanding and having fun and stuff that you can mutually adapt with each other. You know, like my husband still likes to watch these lawyer shows, these endless lawyer shows where there's something awful has happened. You know, someone's been attacked, and then the lawyer, whatever they do, there's eventually a court case and someone goes to jail, and that's it. You know, it's sort of repeated 1,000 times. And this really suits some part of his mind. And I have to respect that. There's nothing wrong with the show. It's just a repetition at a different frequency than I need to repeat myself. I guess that's the way I'll put it.
Understood. And that is something we could spend an entire show about when we have more time. I used to watch Law and Order for many years, and that's pretty much what you described.
Yeah.
Until I realized why was I watching this, and it took a long time for it to come into focus and for me to let go of it. But now I can't watch it anymore because I resolved what kept bringing me back.
Right.
To watch episode after episode of all the different iterations of that that show.
Yeah. Well, we all keep trying to do our best, or at least most of us do. And so I hope that we all really do manage to have a nice holiday and stay alive. Vaccines around the corner. And this will end up as something that people will talk and write about for many, many years. And I hope my suggestions were helpful and you find your way to use the arts and nature to reinforcing your own wonderful energies. And I'm I'm talking about all of us. And,
yes.
That's about it. That's my story for tonight.
And I thank you for it. Your compassion and your unique creativity has always shined through everything that you do. And I'm very grateful that we were able to spend this time together. And I look forward to our next conversation, be it on the air or off the air. If you could kindly share before we close how people can get in contact with you and your world, that would be awesome.
Yes. You can write to me at barbara.holstein@gmail.com. You can find a lot of my work and what I'm doing on enchantedself.com. And if you are on Facebook, much of my stuff is up on Barbara Becker Holstein. And if we communicate and, you know, I feel comfortable, I'll make you a friend. And if not, go to, you know, it doesn't work that way, Enchanted Self. So I hope to hear from some of you, and I wish you a happy holiday season.
The same to you, Barbara. Thank you very much. Happy holiday. Happy New Year. And I will talk to you very soon.
Yes. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. And thanks to everybody who joined us from home, whether you're listening live as we speak or whether you'll be visiting us later on demand. I'm very grateful that you're here too. And wish you happy holidays and a glorious New Year. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake, dream till you feel, dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake, dream till you feel, dream till you know it. Dream till it's real.